The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. Oh, but wait, it's not just the Pick Six Podcast. Today it's a Brady Quinn football show. me making Reggae air horns is pretty cool on audio. It's very cool on video.
Can I tell you a little backstory? Something that I thought was hilarious that kind of it incorporates the sounds that you're making right now, like right, like the lasers or whatever if you're at a club. And so Ryan Wilson will appreciate this. So I'm down on the University of Miami's campus, and I go down to watch Miami practice before they have to play that week zero game against Florida. And they're still trying to figure out their quarterback situation. So I'm kind of watching the quarterbacks closely, and it's Jaron Williams, Nakosi Perry, and Tate Martell. And so one of them throws a deep ball. I can't quite remember who it was, but they overthrow this wide receiver, last name Pope. And he's fast. He's a blazer. Overthrew him, though, didn't complete it. But like 5 seconds later, you start hearing those, bam, 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 and they've like a DJ at practice because they're playing music and all this stuff. And these guys start dapping him up, and they start like kind of giving him some love and everything. And I'm standing next to their Don Bailey, the radio play-by-play guy, and I'm like, What is this? He's like, oh. And then they start announcing he ran 20 miles per hour. So apparently, because they're all about speed and they're all about like that sort of athleticism and all that, they announce whenever the guys on their GPS tracking system hit 20 or over, they like announce it and they put it up on the board and they act like they're in a club. And so even though they didn't complete the pass, they start playing and everyone's like dapping them up and giving the guy love. So it cracked me up every time thinking about it. Like that's the state of Miami football right now.
Yeah, that's how bad it is. It's like, hey man, dude ran fast. Let's go nuts and celebrate, man. Pew, 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 pew. Pew, pew, pew. Obviously that's Brady Quinn. I'm Will Brinson. Ryan Wilson on as he is, every show now at this point, Ryan. But certainly, you know, you do the Brady Quinn football shows with us because Brady, said he won't do any more podcasts with just me. He won't do it. He's refusing
Thank
to.
Thank you, Brady.
I've specifically requested Ryan to kind of teeter out, you know, the balance of power right here.
You can watch us, by the way, on YouTube, youtube.com/CBS Sports. I think that we have a total of 3 shows, but maybe 2, maybe we're going to get to like 5 eventually of Pick Six podcast shows that you can watch on YouTube. 4 total shows. Okay. I'm an idiot. We'll probably get to like 12 at some point. We have eight shows we released during the week now, Brady. 8 podcasts.
Eight. How's that? Why are we releasing more than one during a day? Like, when's your double coming out? Is that Sundays?
Well, so we do one on Sunday night after we recap all the games. Then I talk to Jason Lockenfour on Monday morning and Jared Dubin. That's the Monday preview. Then we do a Monday night recap that comes out on Tuesday morning. Then we do this show on Tuesday evening on YouTube, and then that's released. Then on Wednesday, we do a fantasy show with B-Mac and Heath. On Thursday, that comes out for Thursday. And then on Thursday, we record Picks Podcast that comes out on Friday, as well as a Thursday night recap with the Super Friends. So that's 8 total shows.
Unbelievable. I mean, there's not a lot of runway there for you, is there, Will?
Not a lot of runway when it comes to doing other stuff. I'm glad that everyone got that.
On Saturday, it's going to be Will doing 15 minutes of stand-ups. Look for that to come out as the 9th podcast. I can't wait to hear that.
I hope he's drunk when he's doing it. It'll actually make it more entertaining.
Well, how do you know I'm not drunk right now?
That's a good point. We don't.
Yeah, don't. anyway,
By the way, speaking of things that stupid things that, that people do in stadiums, I don't know if you noticed this. The Redskins, when somebody gets a first down for Washington, they play the Super Mario Brothers music, the little noise. And they were doing it on Monday night. It's like, it's not that, not bah, 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 or anything, but it's like the picking up coins.
Which one is that?
The what?
What does that sound like?
I don't know how to make coin noises with my mouth.
You can try.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
This is how we know. This is how we know Will's not drunk. Because if he was, he would actually be drunk.
Yeah, if I was drunk, I would definitely make coin noises. Exactly. I say that because the Redskins are our first news item today before we dive into more stuff. They are not making a quarterback switch. Jay Gruden was asked about going to Dwayne Haskins and said, I think the most important thing is we have to have some continuity. You know, I can't be changing people every 5 minutes here. I got to give Case an ample opportunity to play with these new guys, Gruden said before crying into his pillow because he knows he doesn't have long in Washington. Brady, you were once a rookie quarterback in the NFL. Would it be smart to play Dwayne Haskins in this situation? It is. I think it would have been stupid on Monday night. Like, you don't throw him in there against the Bears unprepared. I could see the case for starting him in week four, though, because the you have the Giants. They stink, and they're starting Daniel Jones. And I could see Dan Snyder wanting it to happen. Do you think it's a good idea?
I think every situation for a rookie quarterback is different. You know, so much of it is predicated on where that rookie is with the offense. And if we're going to use the preseason, for example, as any indication of where Dwayne's at as compared to maybe how some of the other rookies looked, for example, Daniel Jones, who looked great this past week. He looked great in preseason. You know, Dwayne Haskins didn't look quite as good in the preseason. And I think one thing you have to take into account is Daniel Jones had a bunch of starts at Duke. He's a 3-year starter. Dwayne Haskins only started 1 year, and in that 1 year, he had a phenomenal year, but he got better as the year went on. And I think there's probably a little bit of that learning curve he's dealing with right now with an NFL offense and getting adjusted to what they're seeing right now from opposing defenses on a week-to-week basis and how they game plan. So you don't want to throw the guy in there before he's ready for it. I don't think this is going to save Jay Gruden's job. I think he kind of knew that, you know, they've got to basically make the playoffs if they want to have any chance of retaining his job. And even then, maybe have to make a run at this point. I don't know. But, you know, Case Keenum, look, he didn't have a great game on Monday night. Everyone's going to make a big deal about the fumbles, and I believe he had, what, 5 turnovers, you know, in all with the 3 interceptions and 2 lost fumbles. But up until this point, he hasn't been the reason why they were winless. You know, he actually has been playing some really good football. And Monday night, he struggled. You know, there was times when there wasn't much separation. He had to make a perfect throw, and he didn't. And he didn't have his best game, which I don't know many quarterbacks that have their best game versus Chicago Bears defense. And so the tough thing for Jay Gruden is, you know, if he's going to go down, he probably wants to go down swinging and probably with the guy that he traded for to come in there and play that fits his system as opposed to a quarterback they drafted that maybe he didn't even want to draft. So I think there's a little bit of that stubbornness going on matched with the fact that Case Keenum's a captain of this team. I think a lot of guys look at him as a leader in the locker room, the way he represents himself. And when you look at the precedent that you set as a head coach, especially of an 0-3 football team, if you start demoting a guy who maybe isn't necessarily the issue, and then you start just, you know, allowing a rookie quarterback to step in there because your organization's worried about the future, what message is that sending to the other players? Because if you're saying that you're more concerned about 2020 in the future than you are right now, maybe there's a lot of other veteran players in that locker room who should be starting to think, maybe I should be worried about 2020 instead of right now too.
I think Brady's right about Gruden possibly being stubborn because he might be at a point where he's like, you know what? Just fire me. I've had enough. You saw him with his eyeglasses on. He looked like a librarian last night, completely frustrated with how things were unfolding. And a lot of it's out of his hands. And I do wonder, like, if he went to Dwayne Haskins, that might buy him 3 or 4 games, maybe even 5 or 6 games. But maybe he's like, as Brady points out, I'm just going to stick with Case. Whatever happens, happens. And Case hasn't been the issue. There have been a whole bunch of other issues, starting with no left tackle. Trent Williams is there. Why the Redskins refuse to trade Trent Williams, I have no idea. It seems like you would want to get better if your best player isn't going to show up no matter what, and you can move on from him and get draft picks at the very least. They don't have they don't have him. They have one wide receiver who is a rookie, Terry Scary McLaurin, who is fantastic. He's been amazing. They have no tight end in Jordan Reed, who's still battling concussion issues. The offensive line is in shambles, as I mentioned. The defense is terrible. So there's really no reason to put Dwayne Haskins out there. That said, these are all sort of the same reasons that you shouldn't have put Daniel Jones out there, except he exceeded all his expectations. The one caveat is they played the Bucs. So I do wonder, we mentioned that the Redskins play the Giants next, so we'll see Daniel Jones. But then it's the Patriots, and after that it's at Miami, and maybe Miami is that game where we might see Dwayne Haskins. But again, as Brady points out, if Jay Gruden's going to stick with this guy, it'll be Case Keenum, and whatever happens, happens. And what I expect to happen is that they continue to lose football games.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things too that you look at when you talk about the schedule is that, you know, you do have the Giants on the road, and the Giants passing defense is very porous. But you have the Dolphins in 3 weeks, but you have the Patriots there in week five too. So you got to be a little bit careful. And worth noting, I mean, look, I don't want to get banged on by Mr. Jockman over there for citing nerd stats, but, The Redskins are eighth in terms of pass efficiency right now at Football Outsiders, and they've actually had a decently tough schedule with the Eagles, Cowboys, and Bears. So, I mean, if you want to say Case Keenum stinks, that's fine. That's, you know, not you, Brady. I'm saying if anybody wants to say that Case Keenum stinks, that's fine. But the dude came out and gave him leads against the Eagles and the Cowboys. And if you're Jay Gruden, I really do think it's right. Like, you either come out and you either go down guns blazing with a guy that you like, who's actually posting big numbers and just happened to throw a bunch of interceptions because he doesn't have a left tackle and the Bears defense is awesome, or you go to the guy your owner likes and you try and develop him and you get fired anyway at the end of the year. So if I'm going to get fired, I want to go out on my own terms rather than somebody else's.
Yeah, I think that's the moral to the story for Jay Gruden, because the writing is on the wall. 0-3 now, 7% chance of them being able to make it to the playoffs. So more likely than not, they are looking to the future. And it's gonna be interesting because with this team, the way they look, at least right now, and I'm not sure what Dwayne Haskins will bring. I mean, him and Terry McLaurin will, you know, have chemistry and a rapport, right? They played in college ball together. But you talk about the issues on the offensive line. I'm not sure why they don't trade Trent Williams. You know, it makes all the sense in the world if this team is building for the future, and it seems like they're doing just that. I wonder at some point though, you gotta get the guy in there and get him reps, let him play. And you know, again, it's not the perfect circumstances, but, you still would like to see him go in there and get something done. I wonder if they look at this similar to the Bears with Mitchell Trubisky, another guy only started 1 year, and Mike Lennon started off that season, wasn't playing even close to as well as Case Keenum's been playing so far. But when Trubisky got in there, really limited offense, really limited some of the things he could do. And I think maybe there's a little bit of that with Jay Gruden saying, I don't want to put the guy in there because I'm going to be so limited in what I can do as a play caller that we're not going to be competitive. And that's going to be an issue for me. So, maybe there's some of that thought, you know, too, that, you know, again, they don't want to put him in there and then run half of what their offense can do and really handcuff themselves or handicap themselves so they don't have their full arsenal of plays and things they need to get to, given that, you know, this team struggles as far as, you know, their overall talent and skill at every position.
You know, you mentioned people who went to college together who have a great rapport. That instantly made me think about our good friends, Anthony Jeselnik and Greg Rosenthal. I don't know if you know about this. Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project, a Comedy Central podcast, is back for its second season. Anthony Jeselnik, you know him as a famous comedian, right? Very famous. Greg Rosenthal writes about football for, NFL.com, but he's also sometimes on NFL Network. They have actually been best friends for the last two decades, and now Comedy Central saw it fit to give them a podcast together where they basically go on, and it appears that they're trying to get each other fired from their various jobs, and mostly Jeselnik getting Greg fired from the NFL Network. I think at one point, like, they were on NFL's podcast schedule, and it just didn't work out for various reasons. Probably because Anthony wants to bash Roger Goodell. But they pop on. I think it's a once a week podcast. It's hilarious. I'm a listener. They make fun of current events, their producer, and each other. My favorite thing about Anthony Jeselnik is, and I'm hoping that, he'll say this on, you know, maybe they'll do an advertisement with the Big Six podcast and he'll say this, but Pete Prisco is a huge fan of his. And I want to get an audio recording of him ripping Pete Prisco. I think Jeselnik's funny. It'd be fun. I like Jeselnik though, because he doesn't care about political correctness at all. Like, he says what he's going to say and he does not care. He embraces a lack of political correctness. And while I think it's good to be nice to other people, sometimes it's fun to enjoy a little dark humor. And I think Anthony brings that. Also, Greg, pretty good NFL analyst. So make sure and subscribe to the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project to find out if these two jokers get themselves fired or each other fired Just like maybe Brady and I will get each other fired. Right, Brady?
At some point, yeah.
Yeah. You're probably more likely to get me fired than the other way around, is my guess.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah. we tend to go down these weird winding roads, and you tend to want to keep going down that direction. So, yeah.
Right. Well, also, like, I mean, I would say that your coat of Teflon is a little thicker than mine.
Yeah, I just don't really care as much, you know? And I work with Pete a lot, very close with Pete. So, your give a crap meter has to be pretty low, usually with him.
That's true.
I did actually say, because I do think at some point we're going to transition to breaking down his power rankings. I did say on HQ today that I wanted a printable version so I could use it as toilet paper to wipe my ass with.
Did you actually say that on HQ?
I did. I don't think I said ass, but yeah.
Yeah. You told him that on HQ?
Yeah, he was sitting right next to me.
Did you say use it for the bathroom or like?
I said use it as toilet paper.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Pete's it's funny though because Pete acts like he's like, you write for clickbait. It's like, I'm looking at your power rankings, bro. You're looking for clicks. Like you are looking for clicks. You started the season with the Packers above the Patriots in your power rankings. If you don't think you're looking for clicks by ranking the Packers above the freaking defending Super Bowl champions, then what are you doing? Like you're just out here, you're looking for clicks.
Here's what I appreciate about Pete, and Ryan, tell me if you agree. He laughs at his own jokes as hard as anyone. Like he entertains himself. And so for me, it's like watching him, and Ryan, tell me if I'm wrong. Like that's amusing to me. Like to see someone who laughs at themselves so hard and thinks they're so funny that they can't help themselves. They can't help from laughing at that. And that's Pete Prisco in a nutshell.
No, 100%. I will say this, like Pete, before I knew him, I would just read Pete on the internet before I worked at CBS. Absolutely hated him. I hated everything about him. This was before Twitter. And then you meet Pete. I call him Tweep. You meet Pete, and he is the most genuine, honest person. You could ask him any question. He will give you the answer. You know how embarrassing it is for him. He will be straight up with you. But, yeah, he loves telling stories, and he loves laughing at the stories that he's telling you, and he loves telling the same stories over and over again. But, I mean, Brady, have you ever met anyone like Pete Prisco in your life?
No. He is a character where if I ever wrote a book one day, Pete would have a spot in it, as would you too, but Pete would have maybe a chapter just because of how unique and how funny that guy is.
Is this like a fiction book or like a nonfiction? My life? Is this a memoir? What's the...
I haven't really gotten that far. I think I always wonder based on some.
Like, is this like a Lord of the Rings thing where Pete's the
it would be more nonfiction, more like kind of biography thing if it ever came out, just because I've got a ton of stories, and at some point when everyone's just dead out around me and I'm sitting there on my deathbed, maybe I'll think about writing at that point.
By the way, quickly, go ahead. I know you've heard this, Brinson. I don't know if you've heard this yet. Maybe we told you this is Super Bowl, Brady, but at the Senior Bowl with Dane, the producer, and Pete told us, he spent an hour telling us about the children's book he's going to write. Have you heard about this?
No.
The kid's name is Chip. And his name is Chip because it's short for chip on his shoulder. So everything you do, Chip has a response about how you should deal with things. A lot of times ends up with Chip punching the kid in the face. Violence is pretty heavily. So this is a children's book. Ask Pete about Chip the next time you see him, and he'll give you some insight into how to raise kids.
I can't wait.
I mean, imagine if you took the entire human race and you dropped them into one big room and you said, let's have a draft to see who you would want to write the book that your children read. Pete's a bottom five pick.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, it's like, all right, listen, fine. Get Prisco. Dahmer's all, like, we only got Dahmer and like a few other serial killers left. Just give me Prisco. Okay. Fine.
The Dolphins.
Okay. Enough about Pete Prisco. Let's talk about a more important figure in the NFL, specifically Patrick Mahomes. Now, I want to ask you, Brady, because there's sort of a building hyperbole, and I'm prone to hyperbole. I haven't made these statements, but I've seen a lot of it out there. Do you think that it's possible Patrick Mahomes is the greatest quarterback of all time?
I mean, what he's doing statistically speaking, he's well on his way. I think in order to obtain that title, even though it's not a direct reflection on the play of the quarterback, but we all know he's got to win the rings, right? He's got to win the Super Bowls, and it's hard to ever surpass the greatest of all time in New England and Tom Brady because he's won so often. He's been there so often in Super Bowl, and obviously has six rings, whatever it is now. I mean, it's ridiculous. So until he obtains all those, you know, he can have all the stats he wants. I think there's going to be a lot of quarterbacks with a lot of, you know, big stats and numbers, especially in this day and age, of the NFL. But the pace that he's on right now, it's just, it's unbelievable. I mean, to think that, you know, people were thinking like, oh, he's going to see a regression. Like, he's not regressing. He's not staying the same. Like, he's on a faster pace to surpass the numbers he had last year as an MVP. So, I think anyone who would come up with like the idea that, I don't know, Dak Prescott should win the MVP, just because they don't like giving it in back-to-back years. I don't know who came up with that, but someone said it recently here at CBS. Anyone who thinks that, it was me. I realize who it was, by the way, Will. I just think it's asinine to think that, considering the pace that he's on at this point in time. I mean, it is unbelievable what he's doing. And so I think if he surpasses what he did last year, he's a shoo-in for the MVP.
So here's the thing. I mean, Patrick Mahomes clearly is amazing, and I agree with all that, Brady. I made a quick list before the podcast about my top five sort of young quarterbacks. So Pat Mahomes is number one right now. Dak Prescott, here's the list, number two. This is not my list, but Dak Prescott happens to be number two here. Number three, I have Deshaun Watson. Number four, Lamar Jackson. He slipped a little bit in Kansas City, but I still thought he played relatively well. Brinson can tell you how he got yelled at by Ravens fans. And finally, I have at number five, Jacoby Brissett. Like, he's sort of under the radar, out of nowhere. I just watched the game where they played the Falcons. I watched it earlier today. He is so consistent, and he does everything right. He makes very few mistakes, and I think the way that defense is playing in Indianapolis and the way the offensive players are around him, I still think they can win that division. But those are my top five. I love Jacoby Brissett maybe more than Brinson loves Phillip Rivers.
I'm just not sure that that Patrick Mahomes' stats are that much better than Dak Prescott's. Just throwing it out there.
He won the MVP last year. To be wearing that crown, to be going into this season and so far putting up the numbers that he's doing that are going to surpass it. Like, okay, Brinson, let's see if you think that's going to hold true. Are you taking Dak Prescott to put up better numbers than Patrick Mahomes by the end of this year?
No.
Okay, shut your pie hole then, because you're just trying to make, because that's a clickbait article. That's a clickbait comment right now with you saying, trying to put Dak in that category. Watch the two play. It's not even close. The throw he made into the corner of the end zone off his back foot with pressure in his face to DeMarcus Robinson. I mean, it's ridiculous. Dak can't make that throw. Like,
He threw it as I was just watching these two former quarterbacks talk about it on social media. He threw it before, as Daniel Jeremiah pointed out, and you responded to him. He threw it before the guy broke. Like, it was insane. Like,
it's called anticipation, which he does as good as, or maybe as good, if not better than a lot of other people
Let me ask this a different way. Instead of, is he the best quarterback ever? I just think that sort of got drummed up the wrong way. Has he passed by Aaron Rodgers as the most impressive athletic specimen we've ever seen play quarterback? Because I previously thought it was Aaron Rodgers, and now I kind of think it's Dak Prescott.
As far as a specimen, I mean, I would actually make the case like Josh Allen, as far as a specimen, is probably better, right? Because he's got the strong arm. He's got his greater athleticism. He's smart, too. I think his Wonderlic score is higher than everyone else's in his draft class. But his accuracy isn't quite there yet. But if he continues to improve like he did from his rookie year to his second year, you know, four, five years down the road, you might be having a much different conversation about that. So he would be someone that, as far as a specimen, that I would probably put up there next to Patrick Mahomes. But as far as just playing the position and the feel for it, the types of throws he can make, and with, you know, the way he positions his body to make those throws, it's just, to me, I don't know if there's anyone like it or anything like it. I mean, Aaron's there too, but it's just, it's crazy. And it really is crazy to see what he's been able to do in the short stint that he started now for a year plus. And I think he is on pace, at least, to shatter every record that's been out there. It's just, can they maintain this pace? That's the thing. Like, I think if anything, you could make the case for Patrick Mahomes being the greatest of all time, because I don't know if we've ever seen a quarterback where the NFL hasn't adjusted to him. Like, right now, we're watching teams play against him, and you're kind of saying to yourself, like, the Baltimore defense is pretty good. Like, I know they're banged up in some areas. They got some new pieces here and there, but they're not that bad. And he didn't have any issue with them. The box score looked a lot closer than the game actually was, going back and watching it. And so, with an entire offseason to prepare for this guy, teams still don't have an answer. And so that's the crazy thing for me, is like, they still don't have an answer after an entire offseason. And this is the NFL. Usually when there's a book out on you, there's going to be some challenging games at times. And as we haven't really seen that from any defense right now, you know, throughout the course of his career, besides maybe a game or two last year at the end. But for the most part, he's been unstoppable.
So Brady, you mentioned the arm angles and the, you know, the twisting body positions and all that. You played baseball growing up. We know, obviously know that Mahomes played baseball. How big a factor is that? Is it a factor at all? People talk about it, but is it really a factor?
Yeah, I think it, you know, you play middle infield, you play different spots. You know, you kind of learn just how to throw, you know, and there's a degree of like just being able to pick up whatever you want, throw it, hit what you're aiming at. You know, that like that's accuracy. Whether it's a football, baseball, rock, you know, whatever it is you're talking about. And I think the guys who are most talented like that have the ability to do that. And he's obviously, you know, in that category. But the delivery, I think, for baseball for him, and then how it allows him to be so versatile with the different arm angles that he throws from, definitely plays a factor into all of it.
Yeah, as a fellow former baseball player, Brady, I played a lot of youth baseball, actually. Not a football guy, baseball guy.
Youth baseball. So, like, not even in high school? Or where did we stop there, Will?
Third, fourth grade. It's fine. T-ball. I'm just kidding. No, I'm kidding. God, relax. I don't remember when I stopped. At any rate, my point being is that I think when you look at some of the best former baseball players, and this does not include Tim Tebow, the biggest thing about it for me is, like, they're so good at keeping their eyes downfield and keeping sort of their balance as they're making a throw while on the move. And you see that with, I think, Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray obviously come to mind. Just guys who you can tell that their platform remains steady and their balance remains steady while they're on the move. Those arm angles, of course, help. They learn how to change that. But I think a lot of that really does come from baseball. And it's a reminder, kids, go play two sports. Don't just stick to football.
Go play three sports. Play as much as you can. It's all going to help you out. And then that way you'll stay out of trouble.
And remember, the debate club, very important as well. Also,
you didn't do debate.
what do you mean? Yes, I did.
I can guarantee you, Ryan, debate. Will did this. Will, do you know what cotillion is?
Yes, of course I did cotillion. let's look at some other young quarterbacks, not the guys who made it on Ryan's list. I like Ryan's list, though. Jacoby Brissett, good inclusion. He's playing really well right now. What did you think about Daniel Jones, Brady? Because he came in and lit the world on fire. Danny Dimes, if you will. 23 of 36 for 336 yards. Two touchdowns, four rushes, 28 yards. A pair of rushing touchdowns. The first rookie in NFL history to have 300-plus and two of each of those TDs in a single game. Most passing yards in a Giants first start. Most passing yards by a Giants rookie. Most passing yard in a road win in a rookie's first career start. Is Danny Dimes the truth, or did we just get a little, like a fake fall situation? Like, it was cool last week and now it's hot again. It's fake fall. Do we get a fake look at Danny Dimes, or is it real?
Can I ask this question to both of you? If Tampa Bay, if Matt Gay hits that field goal, are we having the same conversations, the same tone on this conversation?
I think so, just because Giants fans were so happy to see him not be terrible after 3 months of most of us, myself included, sometimes dogging the pick at number six, which I think was a big issue. What do you got, Brinson?
Yeah, I mean, part of my concern is that a lot of the production from Daniel Dimes came in garbage time. Like, it was 28-10. And I think Todd Bowles and Bruce Arians sort of checked out at halftime. We're like, all right, let's mail this thing in. Let's get done with it and get out of here. And then all of a sudden, Daniel Jones was firing all around. Now, look, you get the win. It doesn't matter. But, yeah, if Tampa Bay makes that field goal, I don't think we're speaking of him in the platitudes that we are currently doing, because it was a heroic comeback without Saquon Barkley. And Daniel Jones was making some big boy throws. So, maybe not, but he did look pretty freaking good.
He looked good, and I think that here's what I just take about from the performance. I mean, for starters, he's going to have to run the football like he did. I think that's the element that he brings to this that Eli Manning obviously can't. And it's going to open some things up. It helps out the offensive line. You know, people are always like, well, why does it help? Because now the defense has to account for the quarterback. And so because now you can basically hold a defensive end or hold a backside linebacker, because that guy, when you go to hand off, if you go to boot away, he's watching you. You know, he's got to stay home and be accountable for you, because if not, he's just going to keep that football on right in the end zone like we saw down in Tampa. And so for that reason, it gives you better angles in the blocking scheme. You gain a man. And so unless the defense adjusts and they bring another guy into the box because they now have to be responsible for you, then you got one-on-one coverage on the outside. So it makes everyone's life easier. And so that's going to be a big key for them moving forward. you know, the fact that he did it without Saquon Barkley, you know, I was obviously a big piece of it too. When you break down some of the throws, I mean, look, the two touchdown passes, well, one of them to Ingram, he did all the work, right? That was what, a 12-yard completion, and then he ran the rest of the way with it. So, I'm not taking anything away from the win. I just asked that question because when you look at the box score and you look at the fact that they won the game, now he's the hero. If he comes back, comes up short because they met the field goal in the end, we might be saying he played really well, but, you know, there's five sacks, two fumbles. Those could have ended up being the difference in them winning and losing. So he's got to continue to improve and grow a little bit. So the narrative in my mind changes a little bit with the fact that, you know, they won the game. You did see a missed kick from Tampa Bay. There was, I guess, some drama with Bruce Arians' decision to take a delay game to move it back to center, which I didn't have an issue with. And so I just think that changes the narrative a little bit. Look, Tampa Bay has a much improved defense. They are not what he will face as they continue on this year. We will see then, without Saquon Barkley, with a bad offensive line and a defense that's going to give up a lot of points, then really what he's made of. Because, you know, to your guys' point, some of that production came, I don't want to say in garbage time, but versus much softer coverage from Tampa. And that's obviously not going to be the case moving forward through the rest of the schedule.
Yeah. And unfortunately, though, because Daniel Dimes played well, probably means Eli Manning's going to be out there looking for nueva trabajo. It means a new job in Spanish. Maybe you're out there looking for
gardener,
a new job.
Is that what you that's where you got that from?
I speak Spanish. Why does nobody believe that I speak Spanish?
We know you have a bunch of people who, you know, help out around the house and everything else at the Brinson Estate. So
Andy used the wrong tense for new to pair it with trabajo, but go ahead,
No comment. I will, however, comment on the fact that hiring Brady can be a slow process. Cafe Artura's COO Dylan Miskiewicz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. He's having trouble finding qualified applicants, so he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the candidates finding you. It finds them for you. This technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he's impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all size? Try ZipRecruiter for free at our custom web address, ZipRecruiter.com/pick. That's ZipRecruiter.com/PICK, ZipRecruiter.com/pick. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. We will find out about who needs to hire more quarterbacks coming up after the break.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
All right, time to talk some more young quarterbacks. For instance, let's talk about Kyle Allen. Actually, I want to ask you about Cam Newton, Brady, because Cam Newton, it's reported by Joseph Person of The Athletic, first reported by him, I think it's been reported elsewhere since then, that Cam Newton is battling a Lisfranc injury. I don't know if your foot injury was Lisfranc related or not, but I know you have had foot injuries, and as a quarterback, two-part question. I know you love those. One, what does a foot injury do in terms of your mechanics while throwing the ball? Because I don't think people fully grasp just how important that is. And two, do you think Cam Newton will return this season from a Lisfranc injury?
Okay. So for starters, I did have a Lisfranc injury in 2009. Perfect. And this is, I can talk on it because we went both routes about how to fix it. So the first route I went was non-surgical. And it all comes down to this. So a Lisfranc is the ligament that goes over your midfoot, right? So imagine a ligament that is attached to your metatarsals. That's what they're called. Across your midfoot. And when you tear it, you start to get separation between your first metatarsal, which is where your big toe, right? That, that row of metatarsals and bones down your first toe, and then your second toe, right? So you literally, if you put pressure on your foot, there's no ligament there to hold them together. So in your midfoot, you get separation between the two. Your toes start to spread apart naturally from your weight and pressure. So obviously, it's painful, and it's not good structurally for you if you're trying to perform in particular in athletics. And so back then, they would have told you that, you know, they were kind of on the fence. You could either go the non-surgical route or surgical route. Nowadays, you get surgery. And this kind of brings me to the Ryan Tannehill partial ACL tear from a couple years ago with the Dolphins, right? They said that, oh, we're going to rehab it. It's a partial tear, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that was stupid. You should have just got the darn thing operated on in the first place. Everyone tries to avoid surgery, but in the case of a ligament, the thing doesn't heal itself. If you go the non-surgical route, this is what they hope for. They hope that you put it in a cast for 6 weeks, or at least this was what I had to do. You put it in a cast for 6 weeks. You take that off. You put it in a walking boot for 6 weeks. So you go from non-weight-bearing to partial weight-bearing to then after 6 weeks, so about 2.5 months, to eventually starting to work to be weight-bearing and walking again, right? And it probably takes you about 5 months, 6 months before you're really working back into things. That's the non-surgical route. And so I did that. And it didn't heal right. It was problematic for the next 5 years of my career playing in the NFL. And if I could have changed one thing going back, it would have for sure been getting surgery at that point in time then. And then, wow, you know, would have changed things. Who knows? So I recently had the surgery. I'm actually about 4 months post-op now, doing
that's
better.
So that's the surgery that you had, was the Lisfranc surgery.
Correct. So I finally had it corrected. They had to shave down bone literally with a saw. Because there's a bone spur that I developed, because that helps create stability in the midfoot. Oh, I'm knocking stuff around here.
Just throw it away. It's fine.
Yeah, it's got nice branding though. I just knocked off the mic cover. Anyway, what they do is they put in a plate and two screws, or they're going to put in like two staples, which in my case is what was put in my midfoot. And what they hope is they drill them into your midfoot and your bones, and they hope that midfoot basically fuses, so it becomes all one. And you lose mobility, but you get back stability, and so you can put weight on it, and then you can get back to being back to hopefully as close as possible to your normal self. So that's what he's potentially facing. I don't know the severity of the tear, the sprain, if it's, you know, a little micro tears, or how big the separation is between his first and second metatarsal, or really his toes. But that's largely going to determine if and when he can come back, if it is indeed a Lisfranc injury. So how does that impact the throwing motion? Well, if you're a right-handed quarterback and it's your right foot, which I believe it's his left, but in this case, if it was your right foot, that's your push leg. So all your weight really as you transition to throw the football is pushing from the ground all the way up to the tip of your finger as you release. And that's where a lot of your power is derived from. So that's obviously going to be key. And if it's painful to put weight on it, that's going to be affected. If it's your transition foot, or in this case, you know, his left foot, that's obviously the one you're transferring all your weight on. Well, if you, for example, have pain and when you transfer your weight onto your left foot, you're probably not going to transfer all your weight onto that left foot. So your mechanics are going to be screwed up because you're not following all the way through with your throw or torquing and twisting the way you should, because it's going to be painful to do so. And you're probably going to be falling back on your right foot, right? And what does that cause? Sometimes it causes overthrows, right? Because you're not finishing through your motion to drive that football. Instead,
that's why you would start sailing wide open. Is that how you would start sailing wide open passes in the middle of a Thursday night football game? Because you can't put weight on your left foot, right?
Exactly. It would impact the way in which you'd plant and fall on your left foot. So it creates inaccuracy issues, both sailing balls high, but then potentially what happens is, because, you know, you're talking about the Lisfranc ligament typically, between your first and second metatarsal, so your big toe and your second toe, you start rolling to the outside of your foot to compensate, right? Your body naturally wants to avoid pain, so you'd roll the outside of it. Well, then all of a sudden, imagine like a pitcher, you know, pushing off of the mound, and as he plants with his left foot, he's falling over to his left because he doesn't want to put weight on, you know, that inside part of his foot. And so then that again causes inaccuracy too in the throwing motion and in your mechanics. So either way, I would say it's not a good thing for him moving forward if he tries to go the non-surgical route. My advice for him, depending on the severity of the tear of the damage to the ligament, will be just get the surgery now. It's about a 6-month recovery before he can go back to being close to feeling normal, probably a little longer than that. But it should bode well for him, you know, moving on in the future. And so does he return? I would say if it indeed it is a Lisfranc injury, I'd be saying more likely than not. No, because, you know, one, you're talking about a team that is 1-2 at this point. Do they have a chance of coming back potentially? And we'll see how Kylan Allen does the rest of the way. But if they're not going to be in the playoff hunt, and I do think I'll have to sit out that much time in order to let it heal, because if he comes inflamed or he has more issues with it, and it could get worse, it could tear, and then you're getting surgery anyway. So those sorts of things are the things you have to play out, and for that reason, I don't know if we're going to see him back this season.
All right, well, let me – so if I recall correctly, do you when did you hurt your foot in 2009? Do you remember?
Yeah, I hurt it in November – or was it December of that year? It might have been December of that year. Okay. We're playing Kansas City. We're on the road. And it was the very end of the game. I had a guy literally fall on the back of my foot as I was running out of bounds.
Oh, God. So you didn't – you were done for the year at that point then, right?
Yeah, we had 2 weeks left at that point. So at that point, we were evaluating all circumstances. And, I tried to tell them, like, hey, let me try to get a second opinion to come back and play. Eric Mangini at the time really didn't want to mess with that.
Okay. All right. I know. I was just curious about how it would, like from a psychological standpoint of, do I get surgery? Do I try and rehab this? Because if you're Cam Newton, he's going into the final year of his contract. I mean, he's going to have a lame duck year. It's hard. The Panthers can't pay him this offseason if he's having a Lisfranc surgery and just had a shoulder surgery 2 years ago. So you almost wonder, like, depending on where he is in his career, depending on what he wants for his long-term future, depending on where he wants to be, depending on what the Panthers want, that could alter sort of his decision here. That to me is kind of the interesting spot where the Panthers find themselves in from a, I don't see how you come back. I mean, like, Matt Schaub had this happen in November of 2011. He couldn't come back. I mean, this is not something that you see players, quarterbacks are not returned from. So I would be surprised if we don't see.
If this was a skill position player, like a wide receiver, running back, Lisfranc, Achilles tendons, like those things drastically change the rest of their career. I mean, they're you're not going to have your bones are fused in the middle of your foot. And so think about a sprinting motion when you're hitting on the ball of your foot and you've got all that power and force going through. You don't have the same amount of flexion. So your gait changes and just, you know, the explosiveness, you know, changes in that regard. So, he's a guy as athletic as a quarterback. So it's going to change a little bit of, I think, how he's going to run, how he's going to play.
You think they can win? Think they make the playoffs with Kyle Allen, Ryan?
Stop it. No. He had a great game. He played out of his mind. If they could make the playoffs with Kyle Allen, he'd have been a starter this season. I mean, they started with Cam Newton for a reason, obviously. We'll see. This is sort of the same conversation we're having about Daniel Dimes. I mean, we'll see what happens as we go through this. One game, he was lights out, and they were playing the Cardinals. So, I mean, he made a lot of great throws in that game, but they were playing the Cardinals. So let's see what happens. The good news is that that division isn't great. There are three teams that are 1-2. So if they win 9 games, maybe they're in the mix. I think 8 games maybe feels like a stretch with Kyle Allen. But as you point out every time we talk, Brinson, he's very popular in North Carolina, more popular than Cam Newton, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, we got to get this guy in there. Get Cam out. It is time to make a change. I love that's my North Carolina.
That's how you sound when you have a few drinks in you, Will. Look, I had the chance to break him down on film. This is why I'm optimistic about the young man.
Highest, hey, you covered the game. What are we talking about?
Yeah, highest recruited quarterback in his class out of high school. Went to Texas A&M. Ironically, him and Kyler Murray were there for, I think they shared a year back in, 2015 maybe?
They both transferred.
Went their separate ways. Kyler obviously ends up, kind of sitting behind Baker for a while in Oklahoma, but having a phenomenal year winning a Heisman. Kyle Allen goes to Houston, doesn't really even start. I think he started 4 games, and that's it. And so he was a bit of a journeyman last year, but when he did get to Carolina, he balled out. I mean, he ended up going to New Orleans. They didn't start Drew Brees, but they started a lot of the starters on the defense in that game. Played incredible in that game. Had 2 touchdown passes, no picks, rushed for another touchdown in that one. So it kind of gave you the sense just watching the film, like, okay, this kid can play. And then this year, just watching him this past week in the game, he can make all the throws. I mean, he's very, very capable of making all the throws, operating this system. He's athletic enough, too, to hurt you with his legs from time to time. And I think with the pieces they have out around him, you know, DJ Moore emerging as the number one wide receiver, Greg Olsen back being, you know, that safety valve for him over the middle, the running game with Christian McCaffrey, who's not slowing down, Curtis Samuel, who can do a bunch of different things. They have a nice cast of weapons for him to distribute the ball to. And North Turner, you know, is setting him up to win. So I think this team's got a shot with him. Now, the more he plays, Murphy's Law, the more bad things can and will happen. But I'm curious to see where this goes, because I really do think this could be a tremendous story of a guy that has the tools, has the skill set, just needs more experience.
All right, Brady, you mentioned North Turner. I think this is a fantastic point, because watching the Cardinals game from my home, as just on regular television, it looked like North Turner was dialing up a lot of plays that made it a little easier for Kyle Allen to make throws, to make reads, to do the things you want a young quarterback to do and not have to worry about the big picture. And I mention that because if you watch the Steelers play the 49ers, Mason Rudolph made his first start, and it did not go great. And that's an understatement. Credit to the 49ers defense. That defense is way underrated. The front four is amazing, starting with Bosa and the three of the first-round draft picks. But my issue in part, like Brett Michaels, I'm a Steelers homer, but my issue in part is that the OC didn't do enough to help Mason Rudolph. Number one, how important is it to have a good offensive coordinator? And number two, what should an OC be doing to make things easier for a young quarterback making his first or second start, especially when you're playing a really good defense, especially when you're 0-3?
Yeah, a couple of things I'd say to do. You know, give him formations that give him answers before the snap. And so based on the personnel you have in the game and based on whether it's empty formations or, you know, for example, if you're an I right slot, right? I back set, tight end to the right, two wide receivers to the left. Most defenses will play their normal base personnel. And if they go corners over, that's an indication that they're playing man. There's not a lot of defenses that will play zone coverage with corners over out of that. So if I know right now if it's man or zone, then I know if it's man, I'm working my matchup. Where do I want to go with the football? And the only guy I really have to hold is potentially a rat or a funnel hole player, and then the middle of the field safety. That's it. Those are the only guys I really have to manipulate with my eyes. If it's zone, now I'm going through a progression, and now I'm looking at leverage of those zone defenders. So, for example, the guy right slot. We've got a corner route by our tight end. We've got our seam route basically clearing out for a deep, dig or a deep in cut. And in that particular case, you're probably looking at that deep in cut down to your back if it's in zone coverage. Man coverage, you're probably looking at your matchup on the tight end. Do you like it? If it's Greg Olsen, if I'm Kyle Allen, or if I'm Mason Rudolph, depending on, you know, who I've got there, I might be saying yeah. Otherwise, you're probably still working back to that dig, maybe peeking the seam depending on, you know, what's holding that safety. But, you know, bottom line is the formations help give answers before the snap, and they help the quarterbacks become more decisive and make faster decisions. The next thing is protection. If you go back and watch that game plan, there weren't a ton of times where there was just five-man empty protections. They utilized six, seven-man protections at times. I think even maybe one time they had an eight-man protection. And the biggest key is if you can protect things up, especially when you have those two tight end sets they call 12 personnel, you're usually going to get some sort of form of one-on-one coverage, either man or zone. And if that's the case, you're going to give your quarterback time. He can step up in the pocket, and he can at least get an accurate throw off instead of subjecting him to a bunch of pressure. So the two things I would say, give him answers before the snap of the football with the formations, and then protect him up. Like, give him some opportunities. Even if there's only three men out in the routes, eventually you could find some windows to throw to versus zone, or if it's man-to-man, someone should be able to win in that matchup.
See, that's why I love having you on the podcast, Brady. You're not just a pretty face with some medical foot knowledge. Like, you got like a little deep dive on quarterbacking too. Obviously, Jake. What did you think about the Saints game plan? Because I think it did incorporate some of that. Like, it made some, I mean, like, it was, I don't want to call it neutered. It was safe, man. It was safe.
It was very safe. A lot of throws were on the last games. I'm looking back on my phone for a couple of notes because I actually broke down a number of games. And so
he didn't throw one ball more than 20 yards down the field, Teddy Bridgewater, that is, which is fine. They had a lead. They used Alvin Kamara a ton in the passing game, 10 targets, 9 catches, and Kamara took over. Like, Kamara had his highest snap count, I think, in like 6 or 7 months. But, I mean, this was not a, hey, Teddy B's stepping in, he's going to win the game for us type of situation. This was, all right, we don't have Drew Brees. Teddy Bridgewater is a great game manager with a nice high floor, but we're going to give him a bunch of 1 yard, 5 foot throws, right?
Yeah. So a lot of short completions. I actually think he had the least amount of like air yards. I know that's a term you use of any quarterback this weekend, which is something you're seeing more and more of.
Okay? By the way, Kyle Allen had the most air yards of any quarterback.
He was slinging it, man. They were like I said, protect him up. Take some shots downfield too. And especially a guy, by the way, it was a homecoming for him. He's from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Yeah.
And the greatest story from that game, you guys probably didn't hear it because they didn't have a huge audience, but he gets in town Friday. They came in 2 days ahead of time for that game. He calls up his parents like, Mom, Dad, we're going to do some sort of dinner and have a bunch of people over. And they're like, sorry, son, we're at the Bellagio at the tables in Vegas. We're pregame and getting ready for it. Happy for you. We'll see you before the game. We'll see you after. And so he never even saw his parents before the game because they were having a fun trip in Vegas. How awesome is that?
Wait. His parents are like, yeah. Glad your first game, Kyle. We're going to Vegas. We'll see you. We'll see you when we see you.
I don't know that they knew he was coming in 2 days ahead of time.
Fair.
Real quick on Mason Rudolph, because I want to go back to that. So we kind of made a big deal about we're making a big deal about the air yards and Teddy Bridgewater with a conservative offense. So Mason Rudolph was 10 for 12 on throws behind the line of scrimmage. At the line of scrimmage, we're behind. He had like another two that were over the line of scrimmage, maybe by a yard or two, right? On the day, he was like 14 of 27. So think about that. 10 of his 14 completions were behind the line of scrimmage. That's how conservative they were with him. And another two that were well within close to it, right? And so basically, if you're looking at him throwing the ball past the line of scrimmage, he was 4 of 15. Very conservative. It just kind of gives you a sense of where they feel like they're at with him. And this is coming from a guy that, you know, kind of excelled at throwing the ball, pushing the ball down the field in college, which, you know, was a part byproduct of the fact they have James Washington. He's good. Bad defenses in the Big 12. And it's more of Mike Gundy's offense and his style. But it's not a good sign for the Steelers moving forward. And I think for the Saints, to go back to that conversation, they're not going to be able to continue to do what they did out in Seattle with them the entire season. They're going to have to take some shots, take some chances downfield.
Yeah, the average completed air yards for Teddy Bridgewater, 1.9. Worst in the NFL. 1.8. 1.9 for Kyler. 1.9 for Kyler, the other guy you covered. Mason Rudolph, 2.3. And where's my guy? I guess he actually finished Kyle Allen, 8.3. He ended up getting topped by a couple people later in the week. Speaking of later in the week, coming up, we got some Week 4 matchups to look for. How do you assess the Eagles? They're 1-2. A lot of people picked them to go to the Super Bowl. A lot of people did. Not me, but a lot of people. Probably Ryan. I'm just kidding. I have no idea. 1-2, going to Green Bay. Green Bay's defense is awesome. It's a top 5 defense right now. I think it's a legit top 5 defense. How does Philadelphia attack Green Bay with all their injuries? And can they go into Green Bay and come away with a win?
Are we teasing this or are we talking about it right now?
We're talking about it.
Okay. I thought we were going into a break, or at least you had hinted at that, unless I've had a few too many toughies, Ryan. Tell me if I'm wrong. You missed a break, didn't you?
No, I didn't miss a break. We took the break earlier.
Oh, okay. Here's how I attack Green Bay. If you look at their, you know, the kind of weak points, there's a couple things, obviously, you got to do. One, the edge rushers in this defense have done a tremendous job of getting pressure on opposing quarterbacks. So I've got to ensure that my quarterback has time, and Carson Wentz hasn't had a ton of time. I don't know if the offensive line's necessarily played great so far this year, but they got to figure out what to block it up, whether that's using the running back and tight ends to chip on their way out or formationally making it a longer path, you know, for Za'Darius Smith or Preston Smith, those guys, to be able to get pressure. That's the first thing I'm going to try to do. The next thing I want to try to do is find ways of matching up with the linebackers. I think that's their weakest point in coverage. So I may try to use more 2 tight end sets, see if I can get Zach Ertz matched up on Blake Martinez or one of my running backs matched up on Blake Martinez, because I think their secondary is pretty salty. And I don't know how many times I'm going to find many opportunities there. So I want to get them in man-to-man coverage situations, or if it's versus zone, I'd like to work the interior of the field and see if I can work some of those guys. Because Darnell Savage, he's a savage, so I don't want to mess with that guy either. So that's going to be more of the game plan. I think some short, quick passing game too. And then, you know, off of that, try to protect it up, take some shots downfield when you get your chances. That's probably going to be your best way. But so far, their defensive front has been some game wreckers. And I don't know if they have many weak spots in this defense. So for that reason, you got to pick your spots as far as your matchups, who you're trying to target. And then, look, if they can run the football, that'd be helpful too. I think providing some balance too, try to beat those guys up front on their defensive front, would go a long way too, and helping Carson Wentz have a little bit more success playing against this Packers defense.
I feel like if the Eagles are healthy, they're the team that we thought they were going to be before the season. I really have no bead on what to make of the Browns, other than Baker Mayfield talks a lot. Freddie Kitchens seems way in over his head, and we sort of saw that in the primetime game. And let's see, here's their schedule, Brady. At Baltimore, at San Francisco, Seattle, and then they finally get their bye. should Freddie Kitchen be calling plays, number one? And number two, how do you fix all that's wrong with Baker? Let me throw this stat at you real quick that I just saw, next-gen stat. Baker Mayfield is thrown into double coverage at the highest rate, 6.4%, in the NFL through week three. So there are a bunch of troubling signs. We saw a lot of that in the game on national television to the Rams. How are you fixing the Browns, Brady?
Well, you're not, because you can't fix the offensive line. That's their first issue. Offensively speaking, that's not a very great group right now. Could they develop over time? Maybe, but I'm not holding my breath on that. So what does Baker Mayfield have to do? For starters, he's got to get rid of the football quicker. You know, he holds on to the football too long, trying to wait to take shots downfield. Sometimes when you're just not there, or there's a positive completion somewhere else. And so that's one of the things that he has to improve on personally. Now, in regard to throwing in the double coverage, well, that's what you get when you got Odell Beckham, right? And you got to find a way of getting him the football. Everyone knows you want to get him the football, and you're going to try to hang on to him a little bit longer to get him that football. So whether it's zone coverage, they're going to be doubling him. If it's man coverage, there's probably going to be a safety at a minimum shading to his side to provide help. But he's going to attract a lot of attention. So it's not shocking that since most reads start with your star and your best player, most things are going to go through Odell Beckham. And so it makes sense. And I think that can kind of speak to maybe some of the issues that they are having. Should Freddie Kitchens call plays? I think he should, because it's what he feels comfortable and confident in doing. And so, you know, I do a radio show. I had a guy call the other day and says, Todd Monken the issue? You know, they don't have these issues last year. Is it Todd Monken? I'm like, dude, Todd Monken was bowling in Tampa with a lesser team. I don't think he's the issue, and he's not calling the play anyway. So let's not put it on Todd Monken. But I think if anything for Freddie Kitchens, it might be the fact that, look, he's got to manage it all now. You know, he's the final say on if they're going to challenge something or what they want to challenge, the clock management. And he's got to kind of oversee the entire team in all three phases. So you add that on top of your plate of calling plays, it makes your job a little bit more difficult. Maybe you're not as clear minded and you run a draw on fourth and nine thinking it'll be a good idea. And when it's maybe not. So I think some of that plays a factor.
I don't think he knew what down it was. I really don't think he knew
it's
what
a terrible
down
idea on third and nine.
Right. And it only speaks more to exactly what I'm saying is if he didn't know what down it was, he's got too much on his plate as it is. And so look,
right. Like if you were being asked to sit there and juggle and like talk about football and broken bones in your foot, you wouldn't be very good at one of those things because you'd be too busy juggling to focus on football.
You still wouldn't call
too busy focus on football. You don't think Brady can juggle, Ryan? You don't think he can juggle? That's rude.
No, I'm saying you could be doing all those things, and if you, me, or Brady were juggling and talking about our feet, and someone said, hey, do you want to call a draw play right here? We would all at the same time say, no, that's idiotic. That's my point.
So if you go back through the years, right, maybe back since the start of 2000, how many head coaches have, and maybe even before that, throughout NFL history, how many have called plays and been the head coach? Most recently, Doug Peterson, right? Was that in 2017, I believe? Sean Payton, and they went on 2009? Yeah.
Yep.
And so 2009, and then Mike McCarthy, I believe he did in 2010. I think he was calling the plays then. I can't remember.
Andy Reid does it and hasn't won the Super Bowl, but he's been very good.
No, but that's the whole point is we're talking about winning the Super Bowl. That's the objective of the Browns. That's the objective of any head coach that takes a job. He's trying to win a Super Bowl. And so there should be some thought to, you know, how wise is it to take that job and then not delegate that task? Cause there is a fair amount of management. You're managing people. That's what your job is as a head coach, and then the situations. And if you're not on top of that, you know, maybe, you know, to the point of juggling, maybe you are slipping in some of those areas. And I think when you're looking through since the start of 2000, granted the Patriots have won a lot of Super Bowls and Bill Belichick has been overseeing all of that. You're still, and you're looking at other coaches too that have won that, you know, Pete Carroll, for example, again, he's delegating to everyone else. So there's another number of examples and more examples of coaches who are just the head coach and oversee everything else as opposed to calling one side. And I know it's been more of the recent trend, but I don't necessarily know if it's going to end up, you know, helping these teams win Super Bowls. So it's something that I would give some consideration to if I'm Freddie Kitchens, if I feel confident in Todd Monken being able to take over and call the offense, the way I would see it.
Yeah. And Andy Reid, by the way, is there anybody more notorious for clock mismanagement than Andy Reid? Like maybe stop calling the plays. He actually gave Matt Nagy the opportunity to call him recently.
Well, which thing, right, Eric Bieniemy is kind of ready for that too. I mean, just saying.
Yeah, maybe so. Very quickly, one word answer. Who at 1-2 needs to win more? The Titans or the Falcons?
Ooh, Falcons.
I think it's the Titans. I think the Falcons are going to be okay. Their defense is an issue, but the Titans are going the wrong direction.
I think Falcons are in trouble. Bad division. I would take the Titans. As Sean pointed out in our recent podcast, the whole Vrabel cutting things off thing. You don't need to be 1-3. That's a bad situation. That's it for the Pick Six podcast. We'll be back with another Brady Quinn football show next week. We'll of course be back tomorrow with Heath and Brian McFadden to break down some fantasy stuff. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. And it's been a while since we did a Super Friends mailbag, but we're bringing one back. Here's what you do. Hop on Apple Podcasts, write a 5-star review, and include a question for us. It can be NFL-related or not so much, and we will answer it on a bonus episode. Thanks, fellas. Have a great afternoon.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.